Reverend Myron Merenyuk is pastor of St. Vladimir Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church on North 7th Avenue in Scranton. If you drive by St. Vladimir's, you can't miss the church. It's got several large Ukrainian flags draped outside. Over a year after Russia invaded Ukraine, St. Vladimir's and several other local organizations continue to fundraise for Ukraine. The church has been focusing on supplies needed for the military and estimates over $1 million worth of aid has been raised by the church. Father Merenyuk, welcome to the News Engine podcast.
Good morning, Mr. Ed. Good to have me.
I appreciate you coming. I know you are a busy guy and you have had a very busy year, unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons. I think, as I would imagine, you probably like to tend to your church and your flock, but it has grown to your homeland. You're working to help what's going on over in Ukraine. Before we get into the aid for Ukraine, tell us a little bit about your path to Scranton, Pennsylvania from Ukraine. You came here about 16 years ago.
Yes, we came 16 years ago. We lived 5 years in Philadelphia. And after 5 years, I was transferred to Scranton, and we here 10 years already.
And you, when you came in and you saw the recording studio, you had, you told me a little bit about your background. You have kind of an interesting background, a very musical background. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. I spent at least 15 years for music. I was in music school playing violin, and I was 4 years in music college for conducting, and 5 years in music academy. And after during that time, God called me for priesthood, and that changed my life forever.
So you go through seminary, you go into the priesthood, and you spend some time in Ukraine, and then you move to Philadelphia and then Scranton. When you came here, were you surprised to see the large Ukrainian congregation and representation here in the city? We have a lot of folks with a Ukrainian heritage.
Years ago was a big parish. St. Vladimir was about 1,500 families. Now we have a small, but I was happy to be here. I am not big fan of big cities. We enjoy to live in Scranton here with our family.
Your kids are going to school here, and you guys are happy here.
Absolutely. Scranton became our home. We don't know how long we'll be here, but we enjoy to be here.
And you don't get to pick, right? That's if the church decides.
No, if my bishop decides you have to move, we, like a soldiers, we have to go.
The funds you collect and the items you purchase and ship go straight to the front lines. Things like, I've been reading about you in the New York Times. I read about you in our newspaper. Things like boots, knee pads, drones, helmets, body armor, warm clothing, for example. Tell us about the items that the soldiers are most in need of.
In the beginning, every month is different because need was different. In the beginning, they were looking for helmets, their vest.
Body armor.
Body armor. This stuff was needed because they call so many guys to, and they don't have that stuff. And every month they need something else. And we were able to provide because of generosity of our community, people of Scranton and outside of Scranton helping us. And we bought wherever they need, wherever they can. We bought 5 vehicles, use one for different kind of a group of military. We bought the drones. We bought 600 sets of uniform, all this stuff. And the past couple months, they need most of the time, they need medical supplies. Like, for example, we're buying for American Rescue Company, a chest seal. They're asking in some other stuff.
So if people have a chest wound, this would seal up the
absolutely
wound.
Absolutely. We see that wounded so many soldiers every day, and they need that stuff. And we are blessed that we can help them.
You have become a bit of a supply chain expert. You're not just sending money over there and saying, hey, go buy this stuff yourself. You're buying the stuff here and you're shipping it overseas. And logistically, that just has to be such an incredible challenge. Where does a priest in Scranton go to find body armor and helmets and chest wound, medical kits? How did you even begin to know where to start looking for all that stuff?
Most of the specific stuff, I have no clue. They tell me the name. I say, that's for what? And I learned a lot of things. And I was running around, for example, every month I'm going to Harrisburg to buy for them uniform. I'm at least 100 miles around Scranton, even upstate New York, New Jersey, and Harrisburg. I'm going to buy whatever they need.
And how do you know what they need? So you get some communication from the soldiers or from the folks in Ukraine, and they, you know, they give you a list, or they just say, here's what we're short on, or how do you stay in touch with that?
My communication starts with my brother, and through my brother, we have a communicate with five different groups of military. It's a two paratroopers group, Navy, Special Force, and National Guard. And they calling me and say if we can help them. That's why I know, and we trying to help everyone.
And you're not the only Ukrainian church in the U.S. doing this. There's a bunch of churches that are out doing this. I read about maybe one in Shimokan, not too far from here, but other churches, right?
Yes. Father Mikola, that was my friend. We were 6 years in seminary, and he started some kind of helping in the beginning of the war when the millions of Ukraine moved to Poland, and he raised the money. He flew to Poland to Peremyshl, and he distributed this money he bought for them, clothes, whatever they need. I'm so proud of him.
Yeah, you guys have been doing an amazing job. You mentioned your brother. This is your twin brother. He's in the military. Did I get it right? Is he? He's a paratrooper. Or he's with the.
Yes, he's a paratrooper. He's the first week of war because he was in the military before, and he took them his family out of the Kyiv. He brought them to West Ukraine, and he went to the military.
Right. Now, Father, forgive me for this. We are not young men. You're a couple years younger than I, but we're in our 50s, which means that your twin brother is in his 50s. That's not a young man to be in combat, certainly not in the paratroopers and on the front lines. That's a tall order. That's a tough task for your brother.
Yeah, that's a very difficult, but they call even 55 and 60 years old, and these guys, no question, they learn a lot of stuff, and I see that my brother was kind of struggling with this pressure, but he has a goal. He says, I want to see my country free. That's why family, it's a big part of that push that our soldiers fighting, and they have no doubt that they wanted to see our country free.
It's got to be such a tough task for someone like your brother, who you just kind of mentioned what he had to do. He had to see his family safely across the border into Poland, you said?
Yes. He can pass the border. He brought them, and he come back to the military.
Takes his family to the border, basically says goodbye, doesn't know when he's ever going to see them again, but he knows they're safe. But then he has to go back, and he's at the front. And I believe you told me that he was in Bakhmut, which is the scene of some horrendous, horrible fighting. But he's since pulled out of there. But his unit and people that he's fought with are still in the thick of this in Donbass and Bakhmut.
Yeah, his guys all the time, they just came back, and they do rotation. But even my brother, he was in the most, you know, Kharkiv region, Donetsk region, Luhansk region, that's all the time moving. They are month or two, one place, they move them another, and they are rotation constantly, every couple weeks.
How do you manage that? I mean, he's your twin brother. You have to spend an incredible amount of time worrying and praying for him. And how do you manage that? It's got to be a struggle for you.
This was a beginning struggle, but we have to focus how we can help. That's why I don't have a time for these things to think about it. I'm just focusing to help them. That was my goal, to help them as much as we can.
So you control the part you can control. So you can't control what happens to your brother or your fellow Ukrainians. But you can help here. You can raise some funds. You can raise some, you can collect some items.
Absolutely. And our community was so generous, and we helped them a lot.
So how often are you able to talk to your brother? I know communications from a battlefield are iffy and challenging, and you know, it just making a phone call can put you in some danger. So are you able to hear much from your brother? Or
in the beginning was maybe once a week. Now is more often. I can do twice a week, or I send him text message if he can give me a call. And I'm glad that I say, how you doing? And he's sometimes so upset because he lost a lot of friends. Sometimes he say, pray, these guys wounded, too lost. We don't know where they are. And every week, some stories. Every week, I say, oh, I know these guys went back to Bakhmut. And he says, I'm so afraid, because he got the nickname, Padre, because he's also religious. He's not the priest, but he always asked them to pray. And when they were training, he took them to the Roman Catholic parish and say, just two priests were able around. Please, we need the confession. We need the blessing. And I have to give him credit for that, because we don't know, maybe most of these guys not alive anymore, but that was an opportunity to receive the blessings.
It's got to be a source of comfort for your brother and his fellow soldiers, knowing that he's got a priest back here in the United States, that you're always thinking about him, you're always praying for him, and you're taking it one step further. You're actually helping provide them what they need to stay safe, to help, you know, liberate Ukraine. Does he ever talk about that? Does he ever talk about that, the spiritual part of it, knowing that you're here and that you're praying for him?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we see, even I received a video from Bakhmut a couple of weeks ago, that this soldiers, this officer begging everyone, please pray for us. We don't need anything. We just need your prayers. And that struck me so deeply, because they know just God can help. Our prayers and our communities, other churches, they praying for Ukraine. And that's why Ukraine's still standing, still fighting. When we praying for them, we lift them, they are spirit. That's why they remember that we standing for them. We praying for them. We wishing them well. That's why it's like a miracle.
You know, we tend to be a little cynical in this country when we hear about a mass shooting or something, and people will say, you know, oh, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims. And then there seems to be this pushback saying, well, thoughts and prayers aren't enough. But you just said they are. And I find that to be very positive and very uplifting, to know that maybe someone can't donate or is unable to donate, but you're happy and content with a prayer if they'll just pray for you.
Absolutely. And so many people calling us say, we're praying for you. I say, I do appreciate your prayers, because our soldiers, our people need that kind of support. We are like one big family on the earth. And that's why this support is so important. So important, because most of the people who left the country, who still in the country, they don't have even opportunity to stop in the church. We see so many churches destroyed, and these soldiers, they don't have a chance. If they go after 6 months for rotation, they will go once for the church. That's it. That's why our spiritual, we feeling their spirit. That's why that's a necessary support for them in a spiritual way.
I don't think folks here truly understand what the battlefield conditions are like over there. It's a very active war. It's modern weapons, but it's not modern warfare in the sense that it's, in some ways, it's kind of devolved into almost trench warfare in the eastern part of the country. Are you able to share anything that your brother shared with you about maybe some of the living conditions or the challenges that the soldiers are facing, just to help paint a picture a little bit for the folks here who are thinking about helping out? These guys, they're not living in, you know, homes or apartments. They are in mud and cold and winter. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Even one of my relatives in the area of Bakhmut, and he told me that sometimes they don't have a chance to get a shower for 3 months.
3 months without a shower.
They sit in some hiding spot. They can relax completely, because if they got the call, they have to go 10 miles this west or someplace, and they even they don't have a chance to go home. And we receive so many pictures through this month. We see there, they kind of so tired, exhausted, psychologically, physically. And I see that pain. And even my brother share that some guys, they crying overnight, they screaming, they say, give me bullets, you know, that affect their life. That's why we trying to help them to sleep. We buying for them melatonin to just relax if they have a opportunity and they have poor attention or something, they can sleep a couple hours.
Something as simple as melatonin.
Melatonin, just a little, them, yep.
Little mental break, just the ability to
relax.
Yeah, to get some sleep. Even if it's not a deep sleep, just something to close your eyes for a few minutes. Wow. You've gotten pretty creative about how you ship items to Ukraine. So I was looking into your backstory and I saw that you kind of had broken out how much it costs to ship something via air or by a boat, but you did some creative math and you spoke to our reporter, Frank Lesniewski, and you explained that it was more cost effective for you to fill baggage with some of the supplies that you were shipping over there and buy someone a plane ticket and have them escort the suitcases or the bags personally. And I'm fascinated by that. How, talk a little bit about that. How did you manage to figure out that it was easier to ship, let's say, 35 Kevlar helmets on a plane with a guy and a plane ticket than it was to put them on a boat or a plane and mail them over there?
In the beginning of the war was tough because logistics doesn't work at all. That's why people find the way, buying the tickets. Some people flying three times a week to Poland. Even my friend Dorian Butowicz took these helmets, took their drones, flew to Ukraine, flew to the Poland, staying to help and come back. And that was a big help because stuff like drones, we can't ship anyway. That's just personal. People put in a suitcase, take them, no questions. They deliver because now we can, if we can ship, they take 4-6 weeks. That's why if somebody flying, that's what's the best way, best delivery to Ukraine.
And you say it's a couple times a week you've got,
yes. So that's was a, it's a beginning, like a first 2 months. People constantly deliver it, helmets, body armors, drones. That's what was happening. And then later on was kind of much easier.
Yeah. And I was kind of fascinated about how and where you were getting some of your supplies from. So you told Frank that you buy items from Amazon, but that you're also shopping locally. You're at Boscov's and TJ Maxx and Marshall's and Sam's Club. It must look like a wild scene when someone's at the checkout counter behind you and you've got these carts filled with, you know, all of this stuff that they're not typical purchases, but you are shopping locally when possible and shipping the stuff over there. How have our local stores been? Have any of the local places offered you any kind of discounts or supports or donations?
When I fill it, for example, in a Boscov's, I bought pants, camouflage, fleece. When they make a big ice, I say, what you will do with that? I say, I'm buying for Ukraine military. And they were so impressed. And they, oh, thank you for doing that. And even thermal pants and a top I was buying. And they say, we wanted to help you. And they ask if I know some military that can give the ID. And they, I did. And I bought 200 sets. Pants and some winter clothes.
That's amazing. And we always kind of joke around here about how if you need anything, you can always find it at Boscov's. But who would have thought that, you know, when someone needs 200 pairs of fleece lined, camouflage pants that Father Myron from Scranton could go over there and find them and get them over to Ukraine.
And I bought here in Scranton, I bought everything. And I was in Philadelphia. I also bought like 100, wherever they have, I bought everything and ship, and they so appreciated these guys because winter, especially in the East, was very tough, very windy. And they, even a couple of weeks ago, they say, if you will have a chance to buy more these pants, we will be appreciated. But I went to Bosco no more because I bought everything.
You bought everything they had. Wow. And it's the list of things that you've been buying. And I continue to just be fascinated by this. So it's uniforms, but it's also been boots, tourniquets, medicine, protein bars, beef jerky, painkillers. You had just mentioned melatonin, water purifying straws. I mean, it is just an endless list of what your troops need over in Ukraine. And you're on a nonstop mission to find this stuff and get it over there.
Yeah, that's every month something else. But the most now we focus in medical supplies. They need a lot of medical supplies, like, for example, chest seal, tourniquets, painkiller. That's all the time asking. And I ship 2 weeks ago and I ship last Saturday. We are blessed because without support, not much we can do.
You described some of the inhumane and the brutal conditions over there, and the civilians are living right in the middle of these hostilities. Not everybody was able to pack up and leave, and some just won't. They want to stay at their home. If people knew more about the daily horror, the daily living situation taking place over there in Ukraine, do you think people would offer more assistance? It's hard to imagine that if people really understood what it was like to live in some of the battle afflicted parts of Ukraine right now, that people wouldn't be willing to help more.
We, in this situation, we open our eyes. We see kindness of people, this situation. The first place I wanted to give the huge credit for Polish people who opened the war. They receive millions of Ukrainians, give them food, give them bed. They give them tremendous support, but most they give them love. They treat them like a brothers. And all the world, you know, even United States receive the some people who's coming, they give them kind of support. And that's amazing things. Everybody just feels sorry. And that's why most of them who got opportunity to leave the country, they are safe, they are happy. But we have to keep in mind, so many people stay in Ukraine, dangerous place, and they need kind of support in it, even because still fighting, and they have no peace.
It has to be a little bit of relief for you and your brother and soldiers who are fighting in Ukraine, knowing that they were able to get their families across the border into Poland or some other countries, maybe Estonia.
Estonia, Germany, Italy, France, Spain. Even my family was moving to Poland for first couple of weeks. Then they moved to Spain. And my sister-in-law came back to Ukraine last summer, but their oldest son, he's in high school. He's staying still in Spain, in the school.
It's got to be a weight off them, knowing that their families are safe. I mean, you're in combat, you're fighting an invading force, but just knowing that your family is safe has to be just a huge relief for the soldiers, absolutely,
because they fighting, they know they are a safe place. That's why they can't wait to be together, to come back home.
Is this a difficult balance for you? You have the ongoing needs of your church and your congregation, and you're trying to fund the operations of your church. I saw you mention your heating bill is over $4,000 a month. So you've got to balance the needs of your congregation, but at the same time, trying to help your homeland. And that's got to be a challenge.
That's a challenge, but our people, our parishioners understand the circumstances because all the relatives came from Ukraine. Nobody says, oh, we help him too much. Nobody says a word because everybody trying to help. And thank God we're doing our best.
As a pastor, do you ever feel conflicted? On one hand, you're a man of peace and faith, but the real world needs of your homeland require you to raise funds and items that go directly into a war zone. And it's necessary. But as a man of faith and peace, I wonder, do you ever struggle with that? Or are you able to get right to the part where you say, no, this has to be done? Doesn't matter if I wear a collar.
I don't have any conflict. I'm not buying for them tank or jets. We buy them what they need. We buy medication. They need the vehicles. They need the drones. And I have no conflict with that because that saved the life. Even that drones, what we bought, dozen of them, they saved their lives. In the beginning, it was no drones at all, and they was losing a lot of guys because drones, we know that's ice, and that's why we're trying to save the lives.
You can help see what's coming, but you can offer relief. You can offer aid. You mentioned a lot of medical supplies. I'm sure that is a big part of this, knowing that you're like you said, you're saving lives.
Absolutely. And I don't mind. We focusing now on medication. And since war started, we spent at least $50,000 for just medication, with tourniquets, chest seal, helmets, body armor. This stuff, they was necessary. And we are happy to help.
And this aid isn't going to end anytime soon. I mean, in a perfect world, it would end tomorrow and you wouldn't need to raise another penny or buy another helmet. But that's not the case. I don't know that we're going to see the end of this anytime soon. So you're going to be busy for the foreseeable future.
I wish that's over, but we can't give up. We have to help them. Of course, we're not sending any more helmets or other, but they are asking for medication and we're trying to help. They need the past couple of weeks. They need a lot of vehicles in different country, different groups, communities trying to buy old 15, 20 years old vehicle because this vehicle help to for logistics. Sometimes this SUV or trucks need to take the wounded guys from the fields. And many of them I saw destroyed because sometimes that vehicle can stay 1 week or 1 month. We are happy that we purchased 5 vehicles, all one, but the same day when they receive, my brother asked for blessing of a priest. By today, everything is okay, you know? And this vehicle is in the Bakhmut area. It's like a miracle. Sometimes they are like a 1 week and that's it. They destroyed by Russian artillery. And one gentleman that I never met him, but he says he offered his vehicle. And that vehicle was like a 1 week and he saved 9 lives. And I say, I'm happy. And after that, they was destroyed completely, but saved 9 lives. More, what more value than life? That's why all this stuff, that's about life.
It's amazing that you're able to find out. So this vehicle, you know, you just mentioned one vehicle, but you know what happened to that vehicle. It went through Poland or wherever, drove across Ukraine into Bakhmut and eventually was part of saving 9 lives before it was destroyed. And that's amazing that you're able to get that kind of detail and information about what you're sending over there. And it's probably great that you're able to share those stories because it lets people here know that what they're helping with actually finds its way to the soldiers and it really does have an impact.
Absolutely. And I receive every week couple dozen of pictures, these soldiers, these vehicles, this medication. Every time when they receive, they thank me. And even last night one military guy sent us a video, they say, thank you for your huge support. You have no idea how that support means to us, means world. And in all these soldiers, even in Bakhmut, they send us flag signed by them. And that, for me, that's a blessing. And we are so proud of our guys. And they always, every time when I send them, they always thank our community. Huge support.
And you've got the signed flag over at the church, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's something. Your church has always helped orphans, and sadly now you have another pressing need. You're trying to fend off an invasion, but now there are even more orphans and displaced families who need help. And that need never went away. I mean, you were always involved in that, but now you've got more orphans, more displaced families, and a military need on top of it.
For us was much easier because we know the way. Even past 10 years, we helped 3 different orphanages in Ukraine. We send them clothes, we send them medication and vitamins. And still, even last year, I helped them because they got a lot of people from East For example, our orphanages house in Ukraine, they have 60 children. Beside that, they got 100 children and adults from East to survive. And they stay in, and they say, we have to feed them every day. We need the money. And that's why we send them small amount of money to buy some stuff to cook for them and to be in a good shape.
Can you talk a little bit about, I want to try to help paint a picture here of life in Ukraine. And there is a pre-independence Ukraine in my mind, when Ukraine became independent in 1991 and was subject to Soviet rule prior to that. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like living in Ukraine under Soviet rule? I want to try to paint that picture because I'm going to come back to what it was like current day before the Putin and his crew came in and messed it all up. But so what was it like in Ukraine prior to independence from Soviet?
This was big challenge on that time. 1991, I came for music academy and I saw the difference because especially our church was persecuted. 1946, they just destroy our, they send our priests and bishops and nuns to Siberia. And they were, this, all these years was persecuted. 1991, our church came back. And that was a big relief. They built the churches and we saw the different picture. To live under the Soviet, you was limited all the time. You know, you have to follow the rules. If you not following the rules, you're a bad guy. They will fix you soon. They will send you someplace. That's why everybody just dreaming to be independent, to be free. And that was such a big joy for everyone to be free, not looking again a Soviet Union, looking a European country, looking free country. Their life is much, much better and joyous than to live under the Soviet Union.
So in 1991, Ukraine gets its independence and the country begins to flourish. Investors start coming into the country from outside. You mentioned more freedom, but education and religion and everything is flourishing. And that goes on for a couple of decades. So how has daily life in Ukraine changed since the invasion? Paint a little bit of a picture for me on what it's, if you're living in Ukraine right now, I would imagine you have to contend with water, food, power shortages, all kinds of things, in addition to being bombed by artillery and troops. So maybe you can talk a little bit about what daily life in some parts of Ukraine is like right now.
Still difficult life because, you know, we see almost every day Russia send a different part of Ukraine. You can be safe in the West Ukraine or north of Ukraine or Kyiv. People under pressure. Constant. If we see the siren, you have to run. You have to hide. Even families with children, that's so difficult. That even when they have no electricity, they don't mind. They say, "Hey, we will be okay." But people, our people, thinking, "Who is the bad situation?" Our soldiers, and for them, some kind of inconvenience. That's no problem. That's why they are thinking, we just wanted to see they are doing all right. They have a food. Even I see this picture that one of the daddy of the paratrooper last night, he was packing the minivan going 1,000 miles to the region of Bakhmut. And they don't mind staying about 20 hours in a car. And all people, not just in Ukraine, in the world, thinking about that. People who struggle and they say, my struggle, that's nothing compared with these guys who's in the front line. Sometimes they are hungry. They don't mind even a soldier. They don't have a chance to get the shower. That's nothing for them. They everybody trying to help who is in a worse situation.
That's some serious perspective because you may not have heat, you may not have water, you may have limited food, your kids are uprooted, your family's uprooted, you may not even be safe, but you're still safer and better off than the soldiers, and that's where the people are able to put themselves. They're able to say, this is hard, but our soldiers have it harder, and they're able to just put it away and say, oh, that's, this is what we have to do.
I see that every week, and I see how this thinking about them lift their spirit. They are always appreciate that kindness and support and stuff wherever can send them, and that's good to see. That's a hope. That's a strength for them. And what that can be better reward to see that circumstances.
I don't know if people here in the United States have a true sense of how big Ukraine is. It's a huge country. I think it's the second biggest country in Europe. Help us understand that. So your supplies show up in Poland, which is on the western border of Ukraine. Your supplies cross the border and from Poland into Ukraine. And let's say those supplies need to go to Bakhmut or Donbas or a place like that. How far are we talking? How many hours? Many hours.
If we're talking about shipping and about logistic, two different ways, heavy stuff. For example, we ship 2 weeks ago, 200 sets of uniform going by ship. Take them in the beginning, take them 2 months. Now it's take 4 or 5 weeks. They are going in a safe place. And these volunteers going to the front line every single week. They are receiving, packing, and that's the faster way. Some light, for example, medication, we send by air, go and take them 10 days. And logistic, I see for through the month going very fast, and I'm happy that we can help them as soon as possible.
But once the supplies cross the border into Ukraine, they still have quite a journey to find their way to the front.
Yes, but that not take long. You know, even this logistic, we use a company in New Jersey. They deliver it. We pay $10 for delivery. They got the warehouse in Ukraine. 2-3 days, they deliver it. If people calling me, where is you? They make a picture. Say, next 2 days, they're going. If, for example, I ship in a 4 different military group, they receive in the first week, for example, 5 weeks, they get a uniform and they wear that uniform and say, look at us, we are happy. Look at our dirty stuff, you know, and they are appreciated. They always send me pictures.
You must be so proud of what the troops and your fellow countrymen are able to do over there against horrific odds.
Yes. When I see this happy faces beside the set, situation, but they are happy and they appreciate it, and we connected every week with them.
You're remarkably upbeat. You know, I didn't know what to expect. You and I had never met before. When you came in, I thought, you know, well, he's going to talk about a tragic situation and a tragic story, and it is that. But one theme keeps popping up as you and I speak, and that is your voice of hope and your voice of peace. Your thankfulness for the prayers and the emotional and the spiritual support. And that's never far away from anything you're doing. And that to me is very impressive.
We have to focus all the time, something positive. That's why we, of course, that's a different situation and every week, but this positive, what they need, especially in Ukraine. Sometimes we talk about different situations. Sometimes they want to talk. I listen to them. I'm listening to the soldiers. They wanted to share with somebody, and I'm happy that they call. I say, if you want to talk to me, please. That's like a therapy. They saw so many, even my brother. Sometimes he's crying. I say, what's happened? He say, you have no clue what is my heart, what is my mind. I say, what's happening? I say, that's a pressure, and that's kind of therapy, and I wanted to encourage them to be strong, to be faithful. I send them rosary. I send them medal of St. Michael. They say, we need that stuff. That's why faith in God, that's a huge, huge part of that fight. And I encourage them, you know, wherever you go, start your day with prayer. Bless yourself. Pray for your brothers. Tell me if somebody wounded, we will pray for them. And that's kind of very high level of spiritual connection. And that's it's helping me and helping them.
I love the fact that a soldier on the front lines in Ukraine fighting an invasion by a foreign country can pick up the phone and call a priest in Scranton who's from the Ukraine and get some support, some spiritual support. I'm amazed by that. I know how important it is. I can only imagine how important it is for the soldiers to know that they have support, or like you said, a therapy or someone to reach out to. But who would have ever thought that that person would be on the other end of a cell connection on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean here in little Scranton, Pennsylvania? That it's kind of remarkable.
I'm thinking about, more health, spiritual help through our priest in the United States to serve, by even to talk to them, to give them some kind of therapy because they wanted to say something. They have no opportunity because our military by today, they have just few chaplains. Even I contact one priest who is a full-time chaplain in Kharkiv region. I send it to him, this stuff. And these guys so happy that they have a priest. They have a once a week, maybe once a month, some praying. He will come. He will bless them. Even some sad part for this Father Ihor. He was so depressed couple months. He called me. I say, I can't handle that anymore because he was buried every day, couple soldiers. He says, I'm so depressed. I need to talk to someone. I say, please do talk. And I am praying for him because, one thing, I'm here, but to be there, to see that sadness, that's extremely hard. But, by the grace of God, he's back to normal. He's doing his job, and this guy's so happy that they have one chaplain for, I know, maybe 5,000 troops.
It has to weigh heavily on you, Father. Who do you talk to? Who's your outlet for therapy? Who do you go to when the weight of this situation becomes a burden or something that you need to vent or get off of your chest? Is there someone out there that you can speak to?
Absolutely. God first, because God the best doctor, because sometimes it's happened like a 2-3 days a week and you feel inside. And I do confession even because kind of new stuff in my life. And I, as I mentioned, I pray to God. I say, God, help me. Show me the way. How can I help them? How to be strong, to in positive? Because if you're not positive, you're just like destroyed by this situation. That's why I'm trying to pray wherever I go, wherever I drive, I'm praying for our soldiers. I know they need. And when I'm praying for them, I have my straight back. And that's kind of compensation. Whatever you do for others, you're doing for me. Jesus always reminds us.
It's a great lesson, and it is the path you've chosen, and you get to live that path now. So you had a congregation and you've got parishioners, but an even sad but surprising need for you and your beliefs and your help and your services elsewhere. And there has to be an incredible feeling of fulfillment on your part to be able to do this, to be able to help the way you do.
Prayers, it's the biggest help in our spiritual life and our daily life. And I see how our person became so supportive. We praying every time before our services rosary. And that was never before, but they understand the situation because these people and soldiers have been asking us to pray for them. And as I mentioned, that officer from Bakhmut say, we don't need anything. We just tell everyone, tell every community in church, pray for us. And that's why our parishioners, our community take this seriously. Even Roman Catholic in cathedral, they praying rosary before mass every day. And that's a huge support. I'm so happy to see that they are praying. They will be better and they share the blessing to people in Ukraine.
It sounds like something so small, but it winds up being something so big. Before we wrap this up, I do want to give you a chance to tell everyone how they can help. So we are going to put information in the article links and in the podcast links to let folks know how they can help. But I'm going to give you the opportunity here to tell everyone, what is the best way for folks who want to help the situation in Ukraine? Either they obviously can go through you and your church, but you would know the best way. So if you want to donate money or goods or items, what's the best route for people that are listening to this right now to go to, so that they can help?
Before I ask for kind of help, I wanted to thank everyone who through whole year helping us a lot. And we are blessed that we able to help our people in Ukraine. And still, we would like to see that's over, but still our soldiers, our people in Ukraine need help. If someone would like to help, they can send us some check for our church. And we buying every week some stuff, wherever they need. Now we focusing most of the time medication. As I mentioned earlier, that we just today we ordered Chestal Seal for $6,000 because it most needed medication by today.
A chest seal for an open chest wound, a combat wound. Folks who want to donate or help, they can contact the church directly. They can contact St. Vladimir's over on North 7th Avenue. They can reach out to you directly and you'll tell them how to help.
Thank you so much for opportunity to talk. And I'm happy to be here. And we did something great.
Well, Father Myron, thank you so much for joining the News Engine podcast. I wish you well with what you're doing. And I hope maybe in a year we'll have you back and you can give us hopefully a happy ending and wrap this up for us and tell us that good things are happening. And maybe what we'll hopefully be working toward is rebuilding and restoring, and a little less about the military side of that. I'm hopeful that happens.
I wish that happened, not the year. I wish in a couple months became peace and we will be have a good conversation, that no more fights, no more tears, just freedom, and every soldiers go back to home, to the family. That will be the biggest joy for everyone.
Father Myron, thank you so much for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you.